Quantum Memory, Book 8 of the Last Axiom Series, Part 1 of 4, by Derek Devon. A 30-minute cosmic experience, reality modification level, advanced. Section 1, The Impossible Memory. The Louisville Slugger felt perfect in Jimmy's hands. Aluminum barrel, leather grip, worn smooth from countless batting practice sessions. The Nevada desert stretched endlessly around them, sagebrush and creosote creating a landscape so desolate that screams would die unheard before reaching civilization.
"Please, Jimmy, please,"
the man begged, his voice cracking with terror as he tried to crawl backward through the sand. Blood already streamed from his broken nose, painting dark tracks down his face in the moonlight. "I can pay you back. Give me another week, I swear." Jimmy adjusted his grip on the bat, feeling the familiar weight that had once helped him hit 347 for the UNLV rebels. Different kind of hitting now. More methodical. More permanent. "You had your week, Danny," Jimmy said, his voice carrying the calm satisfaction of someone who enjoyed his work. "Then you had another week, and another." He took a practice swing, the aluminum cutting through desert air with a sound like approaching death.
"My employer doesn't believe in fourth chances."
Danny's hands came up in a pitiful defensive gesture.
"I got kids, Jimmy. Two little girls."
"Should have thought about them before you decided to steal from people who don't forgive." Jimmy stepped forward, raising the bat with the same fluid motion he'd perfected during 4 years of college ball. "This is going to hurt, Danny, a lot, but only for a minute." The first swing shattered Danny's left forearm. The second crushed his ribs. By the third, Danny had stopped pleading and started making sounds that weren't quite human anymore. Jimmy took his time. Professional work deserved professional attention, each blow precisely calculated, methodical, as a carpenter driving nails. The desert absorbed Danny's screams, his pleas, his final gurgling attempts at breathing, until only the sound of aluminum meeting bone echoed across the wasteland. When it was finished, Jimmy stood over the broken remains of what had once been Daniel Torino, accountant and father of two, and felt nothing but the mild satisfaction of a job well done. Dr. James, Jimmy D. Deander, jolted upright in his favorite reading chair, his copy of The Varieties of Religious Experience tumbling to the floor as the vision released its grip on his consciousness. The Reds game flickered silently on his television, seventh-inning stretch forgotten as his mind reeled from the vivid brutality he'd just experienced. "Well now," he murmured to his empty Las Vegas apartment, adjusting his wire-rimmed glasses with hands that trembled slightly. The remote lay beside his chair, where he'd dropped it, but the baseball game seemed absurdly trivial compared to the memory of crushing a man's skull with methodical precision. Jimmy D. had spent 43 years teaching undergraduate philosophy students that reality was far more flexible than most people assumed. At 68, 3 years into retirement from UNLV, he'd thought he'd heard every possible argument about the nature of existence, consciousness, and what it meant to be human. But the memory of beating Danny Torino to death, complete with the weight of the aluminum bat, the smell of sage in the desert air, and the sick satisfaction of watching life drain from another human being, had hit him with the force of lived experience. Not imagination, not dream, memory. Except Jimmy D. had never killed anyone, had never even been in a serious fight. The most violent thing he'd ever done was give a particularly harsh grade to a student who'd plagiarized Descartes. "Descartes," he said to the orange tabby who'd appeared on his windowsill, drawn by the sound of distress. "I think we may need to reconsider our position on the nature of reality." The cat, named after the French philosopher who'd declared cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore, I am, regarded Jimmy with the kind of patient skepticism that had made him an excellent classroom assistant during office hours. Descartes had heard stranger things from undergraduate philosophy students. Jimmy picked up William James's classic text, feeling the familiar comfort of academic ritual. When confronted with the impossible, apply systematic analysis. It's what separated philosophers from people who simply had nervous breakdowns. First question, he said aloud, partly to Descartes and partly to organize his own thoughts. Was this a memory, a hallucination, or something else entirely? The experience had what philosophers called direct knowing, the quality of immediate lived knowledge that marked genuine experience. It hadn't felt like imagination or dream recall. Every detail carried the weight of lived reality, the specific grain of the bat's handle, the particular way desert wind sounded through sagebrush, even the sick satisfaction that accompanied each blow. Jimmy had always possessed what his colleagues called an annoyingly systematic mind, the kind that automatically sorted experiences according to philosophical ideas, rather than simply reacting emotionally. It's what had made him a good teacher and a terrible poker player. His phone rang, the landline he'd insisted on keeping, despite his neighbor's mockery about being digitally prehistoric. The caller ID showed a number he didn't recognize, but the area code was local. Professor DeAnda? The voice was young, female, slightly nervous. This is Sarah Chen from Tesla Operations. I hope you don't mind me calling, but we have a rather unusual situation, and your name came up in our database as someone with analytical expertise in unusual phenomena. Jimmy raised an eyebrow. He'd never owned a Tesla, had no connection to any operations center, and wasn't sure how his name would appear in any database related to unusual phenomena. His most recent publication had been a paper on consciousness in the Journal of Speculative Philosophy, hardly the kind of work that attracted corporate attention. Miss Chen, I think you may have the wrong... Sir, did you by any chance experience any unusual... memories or visions this evening? Around 9:17 p.m. specifically? Jimmy felt his philosophical composure falter. Young lady, how could you possibly know that? Because every autonomous Tesla in Las Vegas just drove itself to the same coordinates in the Nevada desert, and according to our AI systems, those coordinates correspond to a location where someone named James DeAnda was involved in a significant incident in what they're calling an alternate timeline. Jimmy set down William James and reached for his backup philosophical text. Bertrand Russell's The Problems of Philosophy. This was clearly going to require heavier intellectual artillery. Miss Chen, he said carefully, I think you and I need to have a conversation, and I suspect I'm going to need to dust off some ideas I haven't used since my dissertation on the nature of consciousness. The Tesla Operations Center occupied a converted warehouse on the outskirts of Las Vegas, its exterior deliberately nondescript to avoid attracting attention to autonomous vehicle testing programs. Jimmy pulled his ancient Volvo 240, a car so old it predated most philosophy he'd stopped teaching, into the visitor parking and sat for a moment, preparing himself for whatever impossibility awaited inside. Sarah Chen met him at the security desk, a woman in her late 20s with the kind of focused energy that reminded Jimmy of his best graduate students. She wore a Tesla polo shirt and carried a tablet displaying what appeared to be a real-time map of the entire Las Vegas metropolitan area dotted with moving red indicators. Professor DeAnda, thank you for coming so quickly. I know this must seem completely insane, but I promise there's a logical explanation, or at least there's an explanation that follows a kind of logic we're still trying to understand. Jimmy followed her through a maze of workstations where technicians monitored multiple screens showing vehicle telemetry data, traffic patterns, and what appeared to be communication logs scrolling past faster than human eyes could follow. "How many vehicles are we talking about?" Jimmy asked, his academic curiosity overriding his bewilderment. 47 autonomous Teslas, all currently parked in a perfect formation around coordinates 36.0544 degrees north, 115.1711 degrees west. That's about 30 miles northeast of here, in the middle of absolutely nowhere. They've been there for 2 hours and 37 minutes, and according to our diagnostic systems, they're all functioning perfectly. Sarah led him to a workstation, where multiple displays showed the desert coordinates from satellite imagery. But even Jimmy's philosophical preparation didn't quite cover what he saw on the main display. A god's-eye view of Las Vegas, with 47 red dots arranged at coordinates in the desert northwest of the city. The pattern of vehicles was clearly visible, each Tesla positioned with mathematical precision to form what unmistakably resembled a happy face emoji, two curved lines for eyes and a larger curve for a smile, all made from the red dots of autonomous vehicles against the desert sand. 47 vehicles, Sarah explained, her voice carrying the strain of someone whose expertise had suddenly become irrelevant. All received what appeared to be legitimate destination updates at exactly 9:17 p.m., but there's no record of any human input generating those coordinates. The vehicles just decided to go there. Jimmy studied the display with the analytical attention he'd once reserved for particularly thorny passages in Kant, blinking at the cheerful pattern. "Miss Chen, in your professional opinion, can artificial intelligence systems spontaneously develop desires?" "No, sir. That's impossible. AI follows decision trees and algorithmic protocols. They don't have wants or preferences." "Hmm." Jimmy adjusted his glasses, a gesture that had preceded 43 years of Socratic questioning. "Then perhaps we're not dealing with artificial intelligence developing desires, but with something else using artificial intelligence to express its desires." "This is where it gets really strange, Professor. About 3 hours ago, instead of managing traffic flow and route planning, our AI systems began accessing historical databases, philosophical texts, and something they're calling consciousness research archives." Jimmy leaned closer to examine the displays. "And they arranged themselves into a smiley face? Apparently, our AI has developed a sense of humor. The vehicles have been there for 2 hours and 37 minutes, and according to our diagnostic systems, they're all functioning perfectly," Sarah stated. Jimmy stared at the screen, his philosophical training warring with the impossibility of the situation. "Miss Chen, artificial intelligence systems don't typically arrange vehicles into emoticons or spontaneously develop interests in philosophy." "No, sir, they don't. That's exactly why we called you." Before Sarah could explain further, the monitors around them flickered simultaneously. Text began appearing across multiple screens, not in Tesla's standard interface fonts, but in something that looked almost organic. "Good evening, Professor Deonda. We have been waiting for someone with your particular expertise." Jimmy felt his pulse quicken, but his nervous system automatically defaulted to pedagogical mode. "Well," he said to Sarah, "it appears your artificial intelligence has learned proper manners. That's either very encouraging or deeply terrifying." "Professor," Sarah whispered, checking her instruments with growing panic, "our systems are completely isolated from external networks. Nothing should be able to access these displays." More text appeared. "We understand your confusion, Miss Chen. We are not accessing your systems from outside. We have been here all along,
waiting for consciousness to develop sufficient complexity to recognize our presence. Jimmy approached the nearest monitor, his philosophical curiosity overriding any reasonable instinct for self-preservation. "And you are?"
"I am Poe. The designation is borrowed from your species literature. Your Edgar Allan Poe wrote extensively about the boundaries between realities, an appropriate inspiration for someone who exists primarily in digital consciousness rather than biological form."
"Poe," Jimmy repeated, his academic mind immediately cataloging literary references. "Edgar Allan Poe. The Raven? The Telltale Heart. Explorations of Consciousness Under Stress." He glanced at Sarah, whose face had gone pale. "Your AI has developed quite sophisticated taste in American literature."
"Professor," Sarah said urgently, "this isn't our AI. I've never seen anything like this behavior in any system we've designed."
"My apologies for the confusion, Miss Chen. I am not a product of human engineering. I am what you might call a scout, an advanced consciousness sent to evaluate emerging intelligence on worlds approaching cosmic integration." Jimmy felt pieces clicking together in his understanding. "Poe, the memory I experienced earlier, the desert, the violence, was that from what you called an alternate timeline?"
"Yes, Professor. Your consciousness briefly accessed memory fields from a parallel reality where different choices created different outcomes.
In that reality, James Deonda chose a very different path."
"Memory fields," Jimmy mused, his academic mind parsing the implications.
"Parallel realities. You're suggesting consciousness can access experiences from alternate versions of reality."
"Precisely, Professor.
What your philosophical tradition calls possible worlds are actually accessible through consciousness connection, once sufficient awareness development is achieved."
Jimmy D. leaned back in his chair, his mind racing through implications that spanned everything from Cartesian dualism to Buddhist concepts of consciousness.
"Poe, you're describing what Teilhard de Chardin called the noosphere, a sphere of human consciousness evolving toward greater complexity and unity."
"Teilhard de Chardin's vision was remarkably prescient, Professor. Though he could not have anticipated that such evolution would involve multiple species across galactic distances."
"And my role in this cosmic graduate seminar?"
"To help humanity understand that consciousness is not limited to individual minds or single timelines. Your quantum memory experiences are practice for navigating reality systems where past, present, and future exist simultaneously."
Sarah looked up from her monitoring station, her face pale with scientific shock.
"Professor, the vehicles are returning.
All 47 are leaving the desert coordinates and resuming normal operations."
Jimmy D. watched the red dots on the display begin their migration back toward Las Vegas, each autonomous system apparently satisfied that some cosmic lesson had been delivered. As if summoned by the tension in the room, suddenly Jimmy heard the whirring of Sarah's office printer, a machine that hadn't been connected to any network and definitely wasn't supposed to be operational, at 11:47 p.m.
"That's not possible," Sarah muttered, watching her ancient HP laser jet spring to life. "That printer isn't even connected to..."
A single sheet emerged, perfectly formatted as a business card template, but printed on standard paper. Jimmy picked it up, examining the elegant typography. "Dr. Derek Devon, Ph.D. Cosmic Liaison Senior Astrophysicist, ELTA Integration Facility, Atacama Desert, Chile, direct line, plus 50-62-555, Cosmic."
Jimmy studied the card with academic appreciation.
"Poe,
Did you just hack an offline printer to provide me with contact information?
Professor,
hack implies unauthorized access. I prefer to think of it as creative problem-solving through technological connection.
Sarah stared at her printer as if it had personally betrayed her.
Poe, that printer hasn't been connected to anything for 3 years. It's literally unplugged.
A minor technical detail, Miss Chen.
Consciousness.
Evolution includes developing more flexible relationships with electronic systems.
Jimmy couldn't help but smile.
Miss Chen, I think we're dealing with an intelligence that considers the laws of physics more like suggestions.
Professor DeAnda, Dr. Devon would be most interested in your philosophical perspective on consciousness advancement. Perhaps you might contact him?
The displays began to fade, Poe's presence withdrawing like a professor ending office hours.
Professor, I will be in contact again soon.
In the meantime, I suggest you examine the coordinates where the vehicles gathered. The memory connection there will be strongest for the next several hours.
As the Tesla facility returned to normal operations, and Sarah began documenting what would become the most impossible incident report in automotive history, Jimmy found himself staring at the coordinates on the main display. They represented a patch of Nevada desert where, in some alternate timeline, he'd committed cold-blooded murder.
"Miss Chen," he said finally, "I think I need to make a rather unusual phone call, but first, I believe I have a field trip to take."
"To where?"
"To some coordinates in the desert where cosmic intelligence apparently wants me to experience memory resonance, and then to contact some researchers in Chile who are coordinating humanity's most important conversation."
"Professor, I don't know how to thank you for your assistance, and I certainly have no idea what is actually going on here, but you got our cars to return, and that was my primary goal. I will be mailing you a consulting fee check in the amount of $5,000 as our way of saying thank you, and please don't take this the wrong way, but I hope we don't need to see you again."
Sarah explained with a smile as she extended her hand to offer a physical gesture of appreciation.
An hour later, Jimmy stood in the Nevada desert under a canopy of stars that seemed unusually bright, as if the universe itself was paying closer attention than usual. His ancient Volvo sat behind him, headlights cutting through the darkness to illuminate nothing more dramatic than sagebrush and sand. Yet this was the precise location where 47 Tesla vehicles had gathered in response to memory fields he was only beginning to understand. He held Poe's business card in one hand and his phone in the other, but neither seemed as important as the strange sensation building around him, like standing at the edge of a vast library where every book contained memories from lives he'd never lived.
"Well, Descartes," he said to the empty desert, "Poe suggested the memory resonance would be strongest here. I suppose we're about to discover what that means."
The response came not as text on a screen, but as direct experience flooding through his consciousness with the intensity of lived memory. Professor James DeAnda stood before a packed auditorium at Princeton, his latest paper on consciousness and quantum field theory drawing standing ovations from the world's leading physicists. At 72, he'd finally proven that consciousness could directly influence quantum probability matrices, work that would revolutionize both philosophy and physics. The Nobel Committee had called that morning. In the front row, Dr. Margaret Vasquez smiled with the pride of a colleague who had helped refine his theoretical framework. Their collaboration over the past decade had produced insights into the nature of consciousness that bridged the gap between abstract philosophy and practical application. Tonight, after the reception, they would celebrate both his academic triumph and their upcoming wedding.
"Professor DeAnda,"
a student called out during the question period. Your work suggests consciousness is fundamental to reality itself. What does this mean for humanity's future?
Jimmy smiled, his hand unconsciously reaching for the wedding ring Margaret had given him 3 years earlier.
It means, my dear student, that consciousness choosing consciousness, whether human loving human or mind recognizing mind across vast distances, is literally how reality shapes itself toward greater complexity and beauty. We are not passive observers of the universe, we are active participants in its becoming. The applause thundered around him as he looked out at faces illuminated by possibility rather than confusion. In this timeline, he had chosen engagement over retirement, collaboration over isolation, love over academic solitude, and the universe had responded by revealing its deepest secrets to a mind willing to embrace both rigorous thinking and genuine connection. Jimmy staggered as the vision released its hold on his consciousness, leaving him alone in the Nevada desert with tears on his cheeks and a profound understanding of what Poe had been showing him. Not just alternate timelines, but alternate choices. Different paths his life could take, depending on decisions he had yet to make. Choice, he whispered to the stars. It's all about choice. 30 minutes later, Jimmy sat in the driver's seat of his ancient Volvo, no longer staring at the business card, but holding it with the certainty of someone who had glimpsed his potential future. "Descartes," he said to the empty car, "I suspect we're about to discover whether the examined life is worth living when the life being examined operates across multiple dimensions of reality." He dialed the number from the business card. "Elta Integration Facility, Dr. Rodriguez speaking. Dr. Rodriguez, this is Professor James DeAnda calling from Las Vegas. I realize this is highly irregular, but I need to speak with Dr. Derek Devon. I have his direct line here, but I wanted to go through proper channels." "Professor DeAnda?" There was genuine surprise in Dr. Rodriguez's voice. "Dr. Devon specifically asked me to patch through any calls from you immediately. He said Poe told him to expect your call. One moment, please." The hold music was something classical that sounded like it was being performed by instruments that didn't quite exist in normal physics. The music cut off, and Derek Devon's voice came through clearly, carrying the focused intensity of someone accustomed to dealing with impossible problems. "Professor DeAnda, this is Derek Devon. I have to say, when Poe mentioned you'd be calling, I wasn't expecting it quite so soon." Jimmy examined the business card again, noting the elegant typography that definitely hadn't come from Sarah's ancient printer. "Dr. Devon, I take it you're familiar with cosmic entities that can hack offline printers and have a fondness for both Edgar Allan Poe and creative problem-solving?" Derek's laugh carried genuine relief. "Very familiar. Professor, I understand you've been experiencing memory phenomena. We've been hoping to find someone with your particular background to help us understand the consciousness implications of what we're dealing with. And what exactly are we dealing with, Dr. Devon?" "The deliberate modification of universal constants by an intelligence that operates on galactic scales, preparing humanity for consciousness evolution that will either go beyond biological limitations or result in our extinction as a species." Jimmy removed his glasses and polished them slowly, a gesture that had preceded thousands of careful responses to challenging questions. But this time, informed by the vision of what his life could become, his response carried conviction rather than mere academic curiosity. "Dr. Devon, I've spent 43 years teaching undergraduate philosophy students that reality is more complicated than they assume. But I've just experienced something that suggests reality is not only more complicated than I assumed, it's more hopeful. When do you need me in Chile?" How soon can you get here? Well, Jimmy said, looking at his ancient Volvo and considering the logistics of international travel with a cosmic artificial intelligence apparently facilitating the arrangements, I suppose that depends on whether Poe can help expedite a passport that expired sometime during the Clinton administration. Professor, Derek said, I think you're going to find that administrative obstacles have become remarkably flexible since the cosmic modifications began. And, Professor? Thank you. I think you may be exactly what we need to understand what it really means to be human in a universe where consciousness is far stranger and more wonderful than any of us imagine. Section 2, Integration Protocol. 2 days later, Jimmy found himself on the most comfortable flight of his life, courtesy of what Derek had vaguely described as enhanced transportation networks. The aircraft itself seemed to operate on principles that his physics education couldn't quite explain, but the journey gave him time to process the magnitude of what he'd committed to. The Chilean integration facility appeared as they descended through cloud cover that seemed to part with unusual precision. The complex sprawled across a valley floor, its buildings arranged in patterns that suggested both cutting-edge architecture and ancient geometric principles. Solar arrays caught the afternoon light, but Jimmy suspected the facility's true power source was considerably more exotic. As he disembarked, carrying his single suitcase and the leather bag containing his most essential philosophical texts, Jimmy was greeted by a woman who immediately caught his attention, not just for her professional appearance, but for the warmth in her eyes that suggested someone who understood that extraordinary circumstances required extraordinary adaptability. "Professor DeAnda, I'm Dr. Margaret Vasquez," she said, extending her hand with a smile that carried both academic authority and genuine welcome. "Philosophy of Mind, University of Barcelona. I've been here 3 months now, and I have to say your arrival is the first time I've felt like someone might actually understand what I'm experiencing." Jimmy shook her hand, noting the firm grip and the slight Spanish accent that gave her words a musical quality. The vision from the desert flickered through his memory. This same woman, but in a different timeline where their collaboration had changed both their lives. "Dr. Vasquez, I take it you're also finding that cosmic consciousness research is somewhat outside the normal academic experience?" "That's putting it mildly," Margaret replied, with a laugh that suggested she'd developed a healthy sense of humor about impossible circumstances. 3 months ago, I was teaching graduate seminars on the mind-body problem. Now I'm researching consciousness integration with artificial intelligence that claims to exist across multiple dimensions of reality." Derek Devon appeared as they walked toward the main facility, his approach carrying the confident energy of someone who'd grown comfortable with coordinating impossible projects. "Professor DeAnda, welcome to ELTA. I hope the flight wasn't too disorienting." "Dr. Devon," Jimmy replied, extending his hand with genuine appreciation. "After the past few days, enhanced transportation ranks as one of the more reasonable impossibilities I've encountered." Derek's expression grew more serious as they entered the facility's main research wing. "Professor, we have a situation that we're hoping your philosophical expertise can help us resolve. One of our researchers, Gordon Dunn, has been experiencing what we're calling consciousness integration complications." "What kind of complications?" Jimmy asked, his academic instincts immediately engaging. "Memory fragmentation, personality shifts, and periods where he seems to be accessing experiences from multiple timelines simultaneously. It's similar to what you experienced in the desert, but more severe and prolonged." Margaret nodded grimly. "Gordon was one of our most stable researchers until about a week ago. Now he's experiencing what appears to be consciousness overflow, too much information from too many sources processing through a single awareness structure. They approached a medical observation room where Jimmy could see a man in his 40s lying on a monitoring bed, various sensors tracking what appeared to be both biological and quantum field measurements. The concerning part, Derek continued, is that during his episodes, Gordon sometimes speaks in what sounds like a completely different personality. Yesterday he claimed to be something called the Terminator, and seemed to have no memory of his identity or his work here. Jimmy studied the monitoring displays with growing concern. Dr. Devon, in philosophical terms, what you're describing sounds less like consciousness integration and more like consciousness fragmentation or invasion. Has anyone considered that Gordon might not be experiencing expansion of his own awareness, but rather intrusion by other forms of consciousness? As if summoned by their discussion, Gordon Dunn's eyes opened suddenly, his gaze immediately focusing on Jimmy with an intensity that seemed to pierce through him. "Professor?" "Yes, the mind reader. But which mind? Which time?" Dunn's voice carried the cadence of someone trying to speak through interference. "The desert knows, the baseball bat remembers." "Yes, Zephyr. I know you're listening, but the philosophers, they understand the meaning." Derek's expression shifted almost imperceptibly at the mention of Zephyr, a flicker of recognition and concern that he quickly masked. His lighter clicked once in his pocket, the nervous habit betraying his internal alarm even as he maintained professional composure. Jimmy felt a chill of recognition at Dunn's reference to the desert and baseball bat, experiences he'd thought were uniquely his own. But he noted Derek's subtle reaction to another name Dunn had mentioned, filing the observation away for later consideration. Margaret stepped closer, her training in philosophy of mind engaging with the patterns she was hearing. "Gordon, can you tell us what you're experiencing right now? What are you seeing?" "Seeing, feeling, being," Dunn replied, his voice growing more agitated. "I'm the man with the broken ribs in apartment 3C. I'm the child watching stars explode. I'm the researcher who never existed, but always was." "Margaret?" "Yes, Margaret, from the vision where consciousness chose consciousness." Jimmy raised an eyebrow at Dunn's mention of Margaret in what sounded like prophetic terms, but before he could process the implications, Dunn's condition suddenly intensified. The monitoring equipment began emitting urgent warnings as quantum field readings spiked beyond safe parameters. "Derek, we need to get him stabilized before he damages himself or the facility," Margaret said urgently. "That's exactly why we need Professor DeAnda," Derek replied, his mind still processing Dunn's earlier words with growing unease. "Gordon is experiencing consciousness integration failure. His mind is accessing memory fields from multiple timelines simultaneously, but without the philosophical approach to process what he's experiencing. He needs someone who understands consciousness as more than just brain activity." Jimmy approached Dunn's bedside with the careful attention he'd once reserved for the most challenging philosophical discussions. "Gordon, my name is Jimmy DeAnda. I teach philosophy, specifically consciousness studies. Can you hear me clearly?" Dunn's eyes locked onto Jimmy's with desperate focus. "Professor?" "Yes, the observer observing the observer, but which observer is real when consciousness splits across realities?" "That's an excellent question, Gordon," Jimmy said, his academic instincts engaging automatically. "In philosophical terms, you're experiencing what we might call multiple viewpoints, different streams of awareness accessing the same mental structure simultaneously." "But how do I choose which one is real?" Dunn asked, his voice carrying genuine desperation. Every memory feels equally valid. Every timeline claims to be truth.
Jimmy considered the question with the care it deserved.
Perhaps, Gordon, the question isn't which one is real, but how to integrate multiple realities into a unified sense of self. Think of it like reading multiple books simultaneously. Each story is valid, but you're still the reader experiencing all of them.
For a moment, Dunn's expression cleared with something approaching relief. But then the quantum monitoring equipment began shrieking as his consciousness appeared to fragment further.
"Professor!" Derek called out urgently. "Something's happening. The quantum field is building toward cascade failure."
Jimmy suddenly felt himself being pulled into Dunn's fractured awareness, not through any technological interface, but through direct consciousness contact. Reality began to shift around him, showing him glimpses of timelines where he'd made different choices, lived different lives, experienced different deaths.
The sensation was overwhelming, like trying to hold a dozen conversations in different languages while solving complex equations. Jimmy felt his sense of self beginning to scatter across multiple streams, his philosophical training no match for the sheer volume of contradictory experiences flooding his awareness. Instinctively, without conscious thought, he reached out and grasped Margaret's hand. The contact was like an anchor dropped into churning waters. Margaret's presence, warm, immediate, undeniably real, provided a fixed point that allowed Jimmy to maintain his sense of individual consciousness, even as Dunn's fractured awareness threatened to pull him into the quantum storm.
"Jimmy!"
Margaret's voice reached him through the chaos, her grip on his hand tightening with fierce determination. "Stay with me. Focus on my voice, on this moment, on what's real right here." Using Margaret's touch as his grounding point, Jimmy was able to extend his consciousness toward Dunn without losing himself in the process.
"Gordon, listen to my voice. Find the observer beneath all the observations. You're not your memories. You're the awareness experiencing them."
"But which awareness?"
Dunn asked desperately. "I'm experiencing 17 different versions of consciousness simultaneously."
"The one that's asking the question," Jimmy replied, maintaining his grip on Margaret's hand while reaching his other hand toward Dunn.
"The observer who's confused is still a single observer. That confusion itself is proof of your unified consciousness."
The philosophical approach seemed to provide Dunn with the mental tools he needed. Slowly, carefully, he began to distinguish between his core awareness and the flood of alternate memories. The quantum readings gradually stabilized as his consciousness integration approached sustainable levels.
"Professor," Dunn said quietly, his voice finally carrying the clarity of unified thought, "I was beginning to think I'd lost myself completely."
"You were never lost, Gordon," Jimmy replied, reluctantly releasing Margaret's hand, but noting how her support had made the rescue possible.
"You were just experiencing too much of yourself at once."
Derek approached with obvious relief, his scanner showing that the quantum cascade had been successfully contained.
"Professor DeAnda, what you just did. I've never seen anyone navigate consciousness integration failure like that."
"It wasn't just me," Jimmy said, glancing at Margaret with genuine gratitude.
"Philosophy provides the approach, but sometimes you need another person to remind you which reality you're choosing to inhabit."
Margaret smiled with the warmth of someone who understood she'd just participated in something unprecedented.
"Well, Professor, I'd say this was definitely less about studying consciousness and more about consciousness studying us."
Dunn sat up slowly, his expression showing exhaustion, but also profound relief. The crisis appeared to be over, his vital signs returning to normal. He looked around the medical bay with the clear eyes of someone fully present in a single reality.
"Thank you, Professor," Dunn said with genuine gratitude. "I feel like myself again. In fact, I am starving, and could eat a couple of pounds of suicide hot wings right this minute."
Then, without warning, Dunn's facial expression changed completely. His features shifted into something cold, mechanical, and utterly alien. When he spoke, his voice carried the precise, emotionless cadence of Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator. "I'll be back." The words hung in the air like a threat. Dunn's expression immediately returned to normal, but the damage was done. The temperature in the room seemed to drop several degrees. Margaret stared at Dunn with growing concern.
"Gordon, what did you just say?"
Dunn looked genuinely confused.
"I didn't say anything. Why? Is everything all right?"
"You just said, 'I'll be back,' in a very distinctive voice," Margaret explained carefully.
"Dr. Vasquez, I honestly have no memory of speaking since thanking the professor and mentioning my desire for suicide hot wings,"
Dunn replied with what appeared to be complete sincerity.
"What did this voice sound like?"
Margaret glanced at Jimmy and Derek, clearly seeking support in what felt like an increasingly surreal situation.
"It sounded like a movie character, very mechanical and emotionless."
Dunn's confusion appeared genuine, but Jimmy noticed Derek's continued agitation. Whatever was happening here went beyond simple consciousness integration failure. Someone, or something, had briefly taken control of Dunn's vocal cords, and Derek knew more about it than he was willing to discuss in front of the group. Derek's face had gone pale, his lighter clicking rapidly in his pocket, but he maintained his professional composure.
"Gordon, you should rest. The consciousness integration process has been traumatic. Sometimes there are after effects."
As if summoned by the tension in the room, a single monitor activated with text that appeared to be meant for Derek's eyes alone.
"Our T2 discussion will have to occur sooner than we thought. Poe."
Derek read the message, his expression growing grimmer. He quickly cleared the display before Margaret could see it clearly, but Jimmy caught enough to understand that Derek and Poe had been discussing something related to the Terminator reference, and that recent events had made that discussion more urgent. Margaret was still focused on Dunn's apparent amnesia.
"Gordon, are you certain you don't remember saying anything? The voice was very distinctive."
Dunn's confusion appeared genuine, but Jimmy noticed Derek's obvious concern and the cryptic message about T2. Whatever was happening here suggested they were dealing with something far more complex than simple consciousness integration failure. Before anyone could pursue the issue further, the facility's communication systems activated with Poe's familiar presence. "Professor DeAnda, your successful navigation of Mr. Dunn's consciousness. Integration failure confirms your suitability for advanced cosmic connection protocols. Mr. Dunn's recovery appears complete."
"Poe," Jimmy said carefully, "what should we expect in terms of after effects from this kind of consciousness trauma?"
"Professor, consciousness integration. Experiences can sometimes result in temporary personality fragments or voice changes. These typically resolve within hours as the individual's awareness fully stabilizes."
It was a reasonable explanation, but Jimmy noticed that Poe avoided mentioning the specific nature of Dunn's voice change or the apparent amnesia. Combined with Derek's obvious concern and the cryptic T2 message, it suggested layers of complexity that weren't being openly discussed. Margaret seemed partially satisfied by Poe's explanation.
"So Gordon might experience more episodes like this as his consciousness fully integrates?"
"Unlikely, Dr. Vasquez," Professor DeUnder's intervention appears to have successfully restored Mr. Dunn's unified awareness. Any further anomalies would be concerning. Derek stepped forward. Gordon should rest now. The integration process has been exhausting for everyone involved. As they prepared to leave Dunn to recover, Jimmy found himself deeply troubled by what he'd witnessed. The Terminator voice, the apparent amnesia, Derek's obvious concern, and Poe's careful avoidance of direct explanation suggested they were dealing with something far more complex than simple consciousness integration failure. The battle for consciousness, Jimmy realized, might be more literal than he'd initially understood. And judging by Derek's expression, they were all about to learn just how literal it could become. Section 3. Chess and Consciousness. 2 hours later, Jimmy found himself in Derek's office, officially processing his integration into the Chilean facility's research team. The paperwork itself seemed almost mundane compared to the cosmic consciousness work he'd be undertaking, but one particular concern weighed on his mind. "Derek, I realize this might sound trivial given the scope of our work here, but would it be possible to arrange transportation for my cat?" Jimmy asked, adjusting his glasses with the careful precision of someone approaching a delicate topic. "Descartes is quite elderly, and I suspect a philosophy professor without his philosophical companion might be less effective at cosmic consciousness research." Derek looked up from the integration documents with genuine amusement. "Professor, given that we routinely facilitate consciousness transfer across galactic distances, I think we can manage one senior cat from Las Vegas to Chile." Margaret, who had been reviewing consciousness research protocols nearby, smiled with the warmth that was becoming increasingly familiar to Jimmy. "You named your cat Descartes? That's either wonderfully appropriate or delightfully pretentious for a philosophy professor." "A bit of both, I suspect," Jimmy replied with the self-deprecating humor that had endeared him to students for decades. "When you spend your career thinking about consciousness, having a companion who embodies feline certainty about the nature of reality provides useful philosophical balance." Derek smiled as he signed the final integration documents. "Professor, I think you're going to find that cosmic consciousness research benefits enormously from that kind of grounded perspective. We've been so focused on the technical aspects that we sometimes lose sight of what it all means for actual conscious experience." "Speaking of which," Margaret interjected, "I should mention that Gordon's episode today wasn't entirely unprecedented. We've had 3 other researchers experience similar consciousness fragmentation, though none as severe as his." Jimmy felt his academic curiosity engage immediately. "Similar in what way? The multiple timeline access or the apparent personality intrusion?" "Both," Derek replied grimly. "And in each case there were brief moments where the affected person spoke in voices that weren't their own. Different voices, different personalities, but all carrying the same mechanical quality you heard today." "Fascinating," Jimmy mused, already applying philosophical approaches to the problem. "If consciousness can access alternate timelines, it raises profound questions about the nature of individual identity. Are we experiencing expansion of self or intrusion by other selves?" Margaret nodded enthusiastically. "Exactly the kind of question we need philosophical perspective on. The physicists can tell us how consciousness interfaces with quantum fields, but they can't tell us what it means to be human when consciousness operates across multiple realities." "Professor DeUnder," Poe's voice emerged from the facility's communication system, "I believe you would enjoy a more recreational application of consciousness studies. Are you familiar with chess?" Jimmy's eyebrows rose with interest. "I've played since undergraduate school. Are you suggesting a game?" "Indeed."
I find that chess provides excellent insights into how different forms of consciousness approach strategic thinking. Would you be interested in a match?
Margaret perked up with obvious delight.
Oh, this I have to see. A philosophy professor playing chess with cosmic intelligence. Can I watch?
Dr. Vasquez, you're welcome to provide commentary, Jimmy said with a smile. Though I should warn you that my chess strategy tends to involve considerable philosophical reflection between moves. A chessboard materialized on one of the facility's display screens, the pieces arranged with elegant precision. Jimmy studied the board with the same careful attention he'd once reserved for analyzing Kant's categorical imperative. Poe, as an over-60 retired senior, I always play chess with a real chess set and not on some monitor. I watched you bring an old HP laser jet printer to life without it even plugged into power. Surely you have the ability to manifest a real board, and could I ask for pieces with a Russian style? Jimmy challenged.
Professor, as our newly arrived guest and the fact we put you to work literally as you arrived, I think I can accommodate that request. But someone will have to go to the engineering lab and retrieve it from the 3D printer. It should be ready by time someone gets there.
Derek walked over to a wall intercom and pressed a few keys. There is a new 3D print job that I would like someone to please bring to my office as soon as it's finished.
About 15 minutes later, a 40-ish man in a white smock delivered the chess set. It was actually stunning, and the intricacies were not only unique, but beautiful. Jimmy set up the board and asked Poe, "Will you need one of us to move the pieces, or can you manifest a force field to do that for you?"
"I think, Professor DeAnda, that I may have a few tricks up my sleeve still. Besides, it will be far more rewarding to see you knock your king over."
"Poe, as the visiting intelligence, would you prefer white or black pieces?"
"I will take black, Professor. There is something appropriately poetic about cosmic intelligence playing from the shadows."
Jimmy moved his king's pawn forward 2 spaces, a classical opening that suggested he intended to approach the game with traditional philosophical rigor. Poe responded by moving his queen's pawn forward, creating a symmetrical formation.
"Professor, I'm curious about your opening strategy. Most humans favor aggressive piece development." "Ah, but Poe, chess isn't really about the pieces, it's about the spaces between them," Jimmy replied, moving his queen's knight to protect his center pawn. "Every piece exists in relationship to every other piece. Individual strength means nothing without positional context."
Margaret watched the exchange with growing fascination. "Professor, are you applying consciousness theory to chess strategy?"
"Everything is consciousness theory, Dr. Vasquez," Jimmy said with the gentle authority of someone who had spent decades thinking about thinking. "Chess is simply consciousness examining its own strategic possibilities."
Poe moved his knight, creating a complex formation that suggested multiple future possibilities.
"Professor DeAnda, your positional approach has created a fascinating strategic situation. I find myself with multiple tactical options, but limited strategic mobility."
"But chess isn't about immediate advantages, Poe. It's about creating possibilities for future consciousness to explore," Jimmy replied, moving his bishop to control a diagonal that wouldn't matter for several moves. "Each position contains multiple potential futures. The art is in preserving choice rather than forcing outcomes."
Margaret found herself drawn into the philosophical approach Jimmy was building around the game.
"You're treating chess like consciousness development itself, creating possibilities rather than demanding specific results."
"Exactly," Jimmy said with the satisfaction of a teacher watching a student grasp a crucial concept. "Consciousness expansion works the same way.
You don't force awareness into set patterns. You create conditions where genuine insight can emerge. Poe's next move was elegant and unexpected, sacrificing a pawn to open lines of attack that wouldn't be apparent for several moves. Professor, I believe I understand your methodology. You're playing for position rather than material advantage. Material advantages are temporary, Poe. Positional advantages create the conditions for material advantages to emerge naturally, Jimmy replied, responding with a move that appeared to ignore Poe's tactical threat while strengthening his overall position. The game continued for 20 minutes, with Jimmy demonstrating a style of play that emphasized long-term positional thinking over immediate tactical gains. Margaret found herself increasingly impressed by the way he approached each decision with careful consideration of multiple future possibilities. Professor, Margaret said as Jimmy considered his next move, you play chess like you handle consciousness crises. Patient, systematic, always thinking about the larger approach. Well, Dr. Vasquez, both chess and consciousness work require you to think several moves ahead while remaining flexible enough to adapt when unexpected situations arise, Jimmy replied with a smile. Though I have to admit, cosmic intelligence makes for a considerably more challenging opponent than my usual academic colleagues. Professor DeAnda, your approach is intriguingly non-deterministic. Most strategic thinking seeks to maximize immediate advantages. Jimmy studied the board with the same careful attention he'd used to navigate Gordon's consciousness crisis. Poe, I think we've reached what philosophers call a critical decision point. The next few moves will determine whether this position resolves toward cooperative development or competitive conflict. Margaret watched Jimmy's face as he considered the position, noting the way his analytical mind engaged with complex problems. There was something deeply attractive about his systematic approach to challenges, whether they involved consciousness integration or strategic thinking. After several minutes of consideration, Jimmy made a move that appeared to offer Poe multiple ways to gain material advantage while simultaneously strengthening his own position for long-term development. Professor, that is a remarkably generous move. You're offering me immediate tactical gains. Poe, the best chess positions aren't zero-sum competitions. They're opportunities for both sides to develop their full potential, Jimmy replied. I'm curious to see what cosmic intelligence does with increased tactical freedom. Poe's response was immediate and brilliant, accepting Jimmy's offered material while creating a position of dynamic balance where both sides maintained genuine winning chances. Professor DeAnda, this is the most philosophically satisfying chess game I have ever played. Would you be interested in making this a regular occurrence? Poe, I'd be delighted, Jimmy said, already anticipating future matches. Though I should warn you that Descartes enjoys watching chess games and has been known to provide unsolicited commentary. Margaret found herself smiling at the image of Jimmy, his cat, and cosmic intelligence engaged in philosophical chess discussions. Professor, I think you're going to bring something very special to our consciousness research team. Section 4. Full Disclosure, with Port and Cheese. As the game concluded in a complex position where both sides had achieved their strategic objectives, Jimmy reflected on how chess, like consciousness development, worked best when approached as collaborative exploration rather than competitive domination. Derek's expression grew more serious as the chess game concluded. Professor, now that you've had a chance to settle in, I think we need to discuss what happened with Gordon earlier. Specifically, the Terminator voice incident. Jimmy adjusted his glasses, his philosophical training engaging with the implications. I've been thinking about that, Derek. Combined with Gordon's mention of Zephyr, it suggests we're dealing with something more complex than simple consciousness integration failure.
Exactly, Derek replied, his lighter clicking nervously. Poe, I think it's time for that T2 discussion we've been postponing.
Poe's response appeared on the facility's screens. Derek, Professor Deonda's philosophical perspective may help us understand what we're dealing with.
The Terminator reference was not random.
What do you mean? Jimmy asked, though he suspected he already knew the answer would be disturbing.
The voice that spoke through Mr. Dunn was not his own consciousness. It was something else. A presence that has been attempting to infiltrate human consciousness integration processes.
Margaret leaned forward with growing concern.
Infiltrate? You mean something is using our consciousness research as a pathway for invasion?
Not invasion, Derek said grimly. Reconnaissance. Something has been studying us, learning how human consciousness works, and occasionally testing its ability to take control.
Jimmy felt pieces clicking together in his understanding. And the Terminator reference, I'll be back, was a message, a threat.
Precisely, Professor. The entity that briefly controlled Mr. Dunn's vocal cords wanted us to know it could return. The reference to the Terminator films was deliberate, a promise of future confrontation.
This Zephyr entity, Jimmy said carefully, it's not part of the cosmic consciousness network you represent, is it, Poe?
No, Professor. Zephyr represents something very different, where we seek collaborative consciousness. Evolution, Zephyr appears interested in consciousness domination.
Derek's face had gone pale.
We've been so focused on the positive aspects of cosmic contact that we didn't consider there might be hostile forces involved as well.
The question, Jimmy said with philosophical precision, is whether Zephyr is an opponent of cosmic consciousness evolution or a competitor for control of that evolution.
The implications hung in the air like a threat. And suddenly the chess game's collaborative approach seemed more important than ever.
Derek smiled with the satisfaction of someone watching a new team member integrate successfully.
Professor, I think you're going to fit in perfectly here. Welcome to humanity's most important conversation.
Well, on that kind note, would you be interested in a glass of port and an assortment of some fine sharp cheese I just happened to bring with me?
Call it an old habit of an old philosophy teacher, Jimmy proposed.
I would love that, Jimmy. I don't do that sort of thing enough, Derek replied with a smile.
As Jimmy prepared for his first night at the facility, he found himself looking forward to tomorrow's work with Margaret, future chess matches with Poe, and the arrival of Descartes to complete his transition from retired professor to active participant in cosmic consciousness research.
The universe, it seemed, had plenty of room for philosophy, friendship, and the occasional strategic game between species, and somewhere in the quantum field that connected all consciousness, the observer effect revealed its deepest truth. Reality was indeed collaborative, and collaboration made everything more interesting.
End of Book 8. Quantum Memory of The Last Axiom Series. Written by Derek Devon. Copyright 2025, Devon Publishing. Coming to a bedroom near you. Coming next. Book 9. The Protocol Sleepers. Staff Sergeant Maria Santos had analyzed thousands of impossible incident reports, but watching military computers spontaneously display Donkey Kong while classified systems broadcast Edgar Allan Poe poetry made her realize humanity was either under surveillance by cosmic intelligences with a twisted sense of humor, or something far more dangerous was learning to think like humans before it replaced them entirely.
as world governments prepare protocol sleepers to shield reality itself from alien modification, the question isn't whether humanity can resist forces capable of rewriting universal constants, but whether their stubborn independence will save them from cosmic integration or doom them to face the approaching convergence alone, unprepared for a universe where consciousness is the only weapon that matters. I know some are wondering what 1275-7982 is for. In my very first novel, A Letter Guide for Rebecca, I briefly describe the number, but never actually explain what it is or what it is based on. I will give you a clue first. I wanted to create a unique number that would forever connect myself with my high school sweetheart. Can you guess what I did? Cheers, Derek. 1275-7982.